Thank you all for coming this morning. We today have another great talk from an industry vertical, which is quite a treat for us to have other people coming in talking about cryptography in a different setting. So today we have Brian Romanski, Vice President of Strategic Technology, TrustPoint Innovation, and he's going to talk to us about a CMS.
Thank you, Tammy. So at TrustPoint, we are experts in elliptic curve cryptography. For the last couple of years, we have been advising the U.S. Department of Transportation on the design and some testing of a back-end infrastructure and protocols for vehicle-to-vehicle communication. I'm going to take you guys on a quick sort of whirlwind tour of some of the key technologies used in that system, some background of how it works. Hopefully convince you that there's some unique properties in that system, and then speculate about some additional applications beyond vehicle-to-vehicle security where I think the system could be valuable, could be used. Disclaimer, so some of the technical details I'm going to show were developed by others. I have references in the slides, full papers where you can read about those in great detail. And also the views that I'm going to express, particularly the speculation of where this could go, are my own. They don't represent USDOT or any of the other partners who have worked on the design of the system. So with that, first let's do a little background setting. So this somewhat ominous picture of James Clapper, the U.S. Director of National Intelligence, was taken back in February when he was testifying before a Senate committee. He said a lot of things about what the U.S. national intelligence agencies are doing, and they got various levels of attention. This quote about IoT and using data gathered from IoT usage to gather insight on people caught some attention and started a discussion around privacy implications of IoT devices and their usage. Now, as Matt had indicated, there's a spectrum of solutions around security for IoT. It's been well published and recognized that IoT systems really do need some good back-end security. And there's been good improvement, good progress along those lines. But most of the solutions are sort of session-based, like, hey, let's do a TLS session. I'm going to authenticate the server. I'm going to have some sort of nonce or something to authenticate the client. And so we're good, right? Everything's secret. Nobody can see what's going back and forth. That is better, but it doesn't protect against the kind of traffic analysis that is actually particularly interesting for IoT, right? The content of the message itself is usually not very interesting. It's a data reading. It's some sort of local parameter. But who you're talking to, what you're sharing, how often you do it, and where you are when you're doing it, that may tell a whole lot of information. And unfortunately, these mechanisms don't necessarily fix that. What you really want is some sort of privacy-preserving authentication, right? You want to be able to prove attributes about yourself, that you have permissions, rights, capabilities, without actually giving your full ID. I don't want to disclose who I am. I don't want to disclose my account information. I just want to say, yeah, I have permission. Trust me. I'm okay to be here. I'm a member, and somebody's authorized me to do this and let me through. You also want to be able to engage in multiple transactions without them being linked together. So if you go back and do the same thing three times, the authenticating agent should be able to be confident that the entity that it authorized was valid and trusted all three times. But it shouldn't be able to link them to say, was this the same person three separate times, or were these three different people? They should look indistinguishable to the authenticator. Systems that do that do exist. I have listed here two popular examples, IDE Mix from IBM and Uproof from Microsoft. It happened to be two of the systems that are supported by research labs of large organizations. There are many others, so I don't claim that these are the best or the only ones out there. I just say there's many systems. In fact, if you look at the papers that have been published, there's a lot of interest in this sort of 2000 to 2005, and then it went quiet for a while. There's a lot of stuff published in the last two or three years. So a lot of good work has been done. I'm not going to try to get into the comparing these systems. I'm just going to generalize to say their adoption is relatively low. There's not a lot of deployments of this type of technology. I theorize that a lot of it is because they're using sort of novel cryptographic techniques. These are not standard PKIs. These are somewhat unusual systems that haven't been thoroughly evaluated. There's no really good hardware software infrastructure. So if you want to deploy one of these, I mean, yeah, you can use existing HSMs, you can use existing hardware, but nobody's really optimized for it. So if you want to do something at large scale, at high volumes, you're going to have to either make it yourself or code it yourself from scratch. And a lot of these solutions lack sort of the long-term maintenance that you need. So CRLs and the ability to revoke and detect bad users, that gets really hard, right? If it's anonymous and I can't detect the same guy coming back multiple times, how do I know if the same bad actor keeps coming back and messing up my system? So it takes some careful thought to figure out, how do I do that? How do I maintain it over time? It would be nice if there were a big killer application that could drive real investment in research into this kind of solution, that was a really big scalable system that had enough critical mass that chip makers and designers were actually designing for this and making large scalable systems. If only such a thing existed. Keep that in mind. Let's talk about collision avoidance and V2X technology. So car crashes are tragic, right? In 2014, there were over 30,000 fatalities on US highways, and that number has been pretty consistent over the last several years. It's believed that about 80% of car collisions on highways and roads can be reduced dramatically if you can have systems that can detect impending collisions and warn the driver or take evasive action. There's been some good work done on advanced driver assistant technology, so the radar type systems that are in modern cars. They work pretty well and they help reduce that number quite a bit. They can get much better if the cars have even more advanced warning of data directly from the other car. So if you have a two-way communication, the systems work even better. That's even more important if you have a mix of autonomous agents and human drivers, right? So now the autonomous agent is making assumptions about the human driver. The human driver has no clue what the agent is trying to do. If you can have some way of a dialogue between the two or some notice that the driver knows what the agent is thinking, that would help. It's even more interesting if you have two agents from different manufacturers, different software algorithms. Can they have some secure way to message between each other so they can agree on, what are we going to do? Are we all going left? Are we going right? Or how are we going to avoid this collision? Now, if you're going to mandate a system like this that's going to give some information about your car and where it is, you're going to need some level of privacy, right? So the way the system works is you have these basic safety messages. A BSM is basically your car saying, here's where I am, here's my full position and velocity vector, here's my steering angle and brake status. So as soon as I make a change, the data goes out before the car actually starts to move, right? So you get this advanced warning of what's going on. But if you don't protect that, right now you've got a government-mandated system. All cars are going to have to do this for future production. And yet, it's giving away the location of all your car. Like, I can track everybody. This is like a massive government tracking system. So from the start, this was like considered to be a non-starter, unless you can provide some level of privacy protection, some way to make sure that you can't use this as a way to track people. There's other ways to track people. This doesn't prevent those. But this shouldn't be the easiest way to track cars on the road or know where people are going, what they're doing. So at a high level, the solution is short-lived certificates, right? So each car downloads large batches of certificates. They use them for short periods of time. And the recommendation is at least once every 5 minutes, you change your effective identity. The certificates that the cars use are pseudonym certificates. So there's no identity of the car or the driver, and there's no way to track it back to a particular car. So as the car is driving down the road and it's changing certificates, when it switches from one to the other, there's no connection from one to the next, right? It looks like it's a whole different car. It just happens to be in the same place. Clearly, if you follow the car around, you can collect all the certificates it's using, but that requires a pretty focused effort, right? So that's why we're saying this can't be the easiest way to track people. Yeah, you can follow somebody, know where they go, but you can't just use a system and just know, hey, it's the same car that came here yesterday. Roughly, the way the design works is the cars use batches of 20 certificates. So you get a batch of 20, and you cycle through them once every 5 minutes, randomly selecting the next one. You use that for a week. At the end of the week, you throw those away, and you start with the next batch of 20. You use those for a week and throw those away. At manufacturing time, the car downloads 3 years' worth of certificates. So it's a little over 3,000 certs. And then as those get used, you have to discard them and replace them. So you have to basically top off. You're constantly generating new certificates for these cars. So at a high level, you've got these interesting parameters. You've got a large number of new vehicles made a year, about 17 million. But at scale, the system has to support 260 million vehicles on the road. That's just the US, right? The same system's gonna work in Canada and in Mexico. You're gonna have cars crossing borders. So it's gotta be able to scale to the full collection of all those vehicles. You've got these pseudonym certificates that are of no identity in them, or at least no obvious identity in them, in these batches. You're generating billions of certificates a year to keep up with the system, to keep all these cars up to date. You've got this peer-to-peer authentication, so every car is going to be able to authenticate a message from any other car and be able to chain it back to some root of trust that it knows about. You need a very efficient certificate distribution. You need some way to get these thousands of certificates out to these cars, actually billions across the full fleet. And we need to be able to support misbehavior investigations and CRL distribution. So if somebody manages to hack the onboard unit in their car, extract their batch of 20 certificates or 20 private keys for this week's use, and they try to use it to, say, sit on the side of the road and make all the cars stop because they think there's something in front of them, right? You can do some interesting tricks with this if you can fake cars or generate fake data. So we need to be able to detect that kind of misbehavior and revoke those certificates quickly. But they're pseudonym certificates, so they don't have an ID, they're not chained together. How are we going to do that? We also want to rely on mature algorithms. So this system is based on elliptic curve cryptography, AES, and SHA-256 as its core elements, all well-established and trusted algorithms. We want to make sure that it manages for secure multi-vendor support. So the car makers don't necessarily trust each other, right? Ford doesn't really trust GM or Volkswagen. They don't want to disclose how many cars they've made, of which model, and where they ship them to. So the system's got to protect their privacy as well. And we also want to make sure there's no single back-end component that can break privacy. Again, back to this paranoia about the government trying to track you, we want to make sure that no one entity has all the information to assemble the data that says, oh yeah, I know whose car that is. And as I said, CRL blacklist management to revoke things, and it has to work with intermittent network access. So we can't mandate that all cars pay for a monthly subscription to a cellular plan. So some cars, you know, in a major metropolitan area, you might have roadside units that they can talk to and get updates. But if you're out in a rural area, your car may not talk to the internet for months at a time, maybe years at a time. Maybe it's only when you bring it in for service that it actually gets updated with a real internet connection. So we need to allow for some sort of peer-to-peer messaging. So we have very short windows of opportunity to get updates and messages to vehicles. So how do we do that? What you see here is, a little bit dated. This is an earlier diagram of what the back-end system looks like. This is called the Security Credential Management System. This is the infrastructure that supports the distribution of certificates to these cars. And I'm not going to take you through all the details of what's here. I'm going to highlight a few key elements of it. But at this level, just look at it and say, okay, all the stuff that's in yellow and blue is what's in a traditional PKI. That's pretty well-established, mature technology. All the stuff that's in green is what's unique to the system, just to make it privacy-preserving, just to support that revocation and privacy aspect of it. Now, how do we do this? There's a couple of tricks that we use to make the system work well. One of them is you need really efficient certificates. So first of all, we chose ECC cryptography, right? ECC is much smaller public keys and digital signatures than you're going to get with any kind of discrete log-based PKI system, right? So that gives you a big help. But we also then use what's called implicit certificates. Now, quick summary of what that is. A traditional certificate has three parts, right? You got a public key, you got some metadata, and you got a digital signature. Everybody's got to know the CA's public key. You use that to verify the digital signature, pull out the public key, you verify a signature. Pretty straightforward. An implicit certificate, similar, but you cut off basically the digital signature and you merge that in with the public key to create this reconstruction data. You have an algorithm, a reconstruction function, which emerged with the public key of the CA. That generates the public key of the entity. You then verify a digital signature. Now, it's been shown by Q and Vanstone, who created this, and several others, that when you validate that digital signature, not only does it prove the data on the message is legitimate, but it also proves that the metadata is correct. So now you've verified the expiration date, the identity of the sender, and the other metadata that's in there is proved to be valid as soon as I validate that digital signature with the reconstructed public key. And there's a reference there if you want to read more. Really nice wiki page, actually written by one of my colleagues. Now, to get lots of certificates, these thousands of certificates, and to get them over the air while the car is on the road, you need an efficient way to distribute these certificates. So what's shown here is a traditional, typical way to do a single request response. So a user talks to a certificate authority and says, hey, here's my ID, and here's if you're requesting an implicit certificate, you send over basically an elliptic curve point. It's shown here as alpha times G. G is a elliptic curve generator point, very carefully chosen. Alpha is an integer, a large constant that's known only to the user. When you multiply them together, you get a new elliptic curve point, and it's impossible to figure out what alpha is, right? So alpha is a secret, really. You're just sending the multiplication alpha times G to the CA. The CA does a process. It sends back a certificate and a reconstruction value R. So simple process. It's relatively quick, but you've got to do this once for every certificate that you want, right? So you're talking thousands of certificates times millions of vehicles. It's a relatively slow process. So how do we make that more efficient? We're going to introduce a helper function, the registration authority in this case. So now what we're going to do is the same process we did before. The user still sends its ID, its alpha G, but it's going to include a function that can generate lots of large integers. We're going to call that f of I for now. In the SEMS, we actually use a derivation of AES, where basically I is part of the key, the material that you send over. I don't show all the details of that, but there's, again, a reference here of a nice paper that explains how this works and how it's architected. For now, just assume that f of I is, for every I, it produces a unique large integer, and both the RA and the user can both produce the same large integer, right? So the RA then is going to break that into thousands of individual requests, right? So conveniently, I can take alpha g plus fi times g and generate another unique elliptic curve point. So from the CA's perspective, it's doing the same thing it did before. It gets an ID and an elliptic curve point. It returns a certificate. The RA collects all those, batches them into a large tar file, effectively. And now the user can come back and just download that as one single HTTP GET request, right? It downloads one big file, and it's got its thousands or hundreds of certificates, whatever it needs. So we know of a very efficient way, using a nice convenient attribute of elliptic curves, that can get us thousands of certificates downloaded. Now, in this diagram, notice I'm still sending the ID of the user to the certificate authority. So if all we did is this, now every certificate has the original ID of the user in there. I said these are pseudonym certificates. How do we do that? This is where things get really complicated. I'm going to go through this at a high level, but again, I reference you to the paper on this slide if you want to know all the details of this. Briefly, the way this works is you're going to create a hash chain, and there's a nice attribute of a hash chain, right? Once I know the seed value, I can compute all the future values, but I can't go backwards and compute the past values. So fundamentally, what we do is if you want to be able to revoke somebody's certificates, I can publish the seed or the current value of their hash chain, and everybody in the system can compute all future values once the seed is known. So if I could put that seed value on the certificate revocation list, anybody will know, hey, this guy has been revoked. I can not trust them anymore. But two nice trap attributes of that, right? Before the seed value goes out, all of them are undistinguishable. You can't correlate the seed value or the linkage values together. And once I have published a seed value, I still can't go back and know where that car was. So just because somebody is revoked, it takes away the privacy going forward, but it doesn't break the privacy going back. You can't go back and figure out where they've been. Couple of quick details on this. We have two linkage authorities. That's the two boxes on the bottom there that independently compute these linkage values, or the PLVs, or pre-linkage values, actually. And we XOR them together to create the actual linkage value. Reason for that is you don't want either of those LAs to actually know all of the linkage values in the car, right? So you don't want any one entity in the system to be able to look at a certificate and say, yeah, I know which car that went into, or I know all these went into the same car. So by having at least two linkage authorities, XORing them together, neither of them would recognize the final value. They actually encrypt that value, and they send it back to the RA, but the RA never gets to see it because it's encrypted. And then, I'm not shown here, but when the PCA sends the final result back to the car, that's actually encrypted using another public key that's generated through the same exact process, so that only the user has the secret value that can decrypt the value that the PCA created, right? So now the RA knows who the car is and can correlate all the results together, but the RA doesn't know the final certificate that went back, so the RA can't identify a car once it's on the road. So in summary, if you take all the elements I just talked to, you've got a car on the road, it's got something called an onboard unit. That's a secure device inside the car. It sends a message to what we call a location obscure or proxy. This is just basically a network address translator that wipes out any network information so that the RA can't figure out what address did the car come from, where physically might it be in the world. The RA identifies a car, knows exactly whose car it is, validates that it's a legit car and it's allowed to get a certificate, does that process of breaking out thousands of certs, gets the linkage values from the two LAs, the PCA signs these things, and sends a batch back to the car. Conveniently, no one part of the system knows all the details about the certificates or the car, so nobody can reassemble the data. I mentioned that the system can do revocation and blacklisting, so quickly the way that works is all of the vehicles on the system are capable of producing what we call misbehavior reports. So if a car detects another vehicle that is acting strange and maybe jumping around, its location is inconsistent, or it seems to be in multiple locations at once, or a signature is invalid, it can take the full certificate that it got from that car and create a misbehavior report, send it to the misbehavior authority. The MA has the capacity to do what we call an investigation. Right? This is like a judge getting a court order to say, hey, I need to unlock this guy. They behaved badly. I have a reason to understand what happened there. So the MA is the one component that can go to the RA, the PCA, and the two LAs, pull all that information together and say, I need to know if all of these pseudonym certs are from the same car. It can figure that out. It's got a complex process to do that. If it concludes that a car is acting badly, it can put it on the blacklist so that that car will never get new pseudonym certificates, and it can issue those linkage values to the CRL so nobody will trust certificates from that car anymore. So the cars can directly download the CRL. There's also a mechanism so they can share it peer-to-peer. So even if you don't have network access, you can get the latest CRL from your other cars, or you get it in batches from other cars. So you can always have the latest CRL in your car. So now, what can you do with this, right? This system was designed for peer-to-peer cars. It's got this very complex system for maintaining privacy. Where else could you use it? Well, it's really well designed for any kind of opt-in sensor network, right? Think of IoT devices where I'm gathering data about the environment and I want to upload it, but I don't necessarily want to give up who I am. Like, hey, I'll help out the ecosystem, but I don't want to give up who I am, where I am, and what I'm doing. So for example, fleet vehicles, their travel path, how they organize, what they do is proprietary data, right? That's part of their secret sauce of how they run efficiently. So a large postal carrier, for example, or package carrier, may not want to give out all the routes that they take, but they might be willing to collect atmospheric data, environmental data with their vehicles, which are traveling all over the place. But they could use a system like this to maintain anonymity and privacy of where they've been, but still contribute data to the system. You can imagine aerial delivery systems doing the same thing. These are now different altitudes and covering much more land area. System also works in reverse, right? So if you are a user and you want to get access to some distributed sensing network, like say cameras or other devices that are distributed around the environment, you might want to authenticate to get access to that information, say a stream of video, but you don't necessarily want to give up who you are. So you can use the same mechanism to issue a pseudonym certificate to do that. So if you expand that to a smart city type of an example, right? If you really want the promise of the smart city and broadly distributed IoT, right, the cities are not going to be able to afford to deploy all the sensors themselves. They're going to need to use opt-in type environments like commercial and individuals to contribute data to the system. But again, a lot of these users don't want to give up their identity. So you can use a system like this to maintain anonymity and yet have trusted data injected into the system. And the inverse of that is any citizen, any user wants to get access to the data directly from a local sensor, can anonymously authenticate, say, yeah, I'm really allowed to get this. Please give me a picture, give me a sensor data, give me a parking space, give me whatever. I'm authorized to do that. So it helps make the smart city much more scalable while maintaining privacy. And then a more generic use case is any kind of membership validation, right? We're used to when you authenticate to get access to a building or get access to a resource, you use a credential that identifies you, right? So it says, this is who I am. And you assume that the person authenticating you is going to have to know who you are. It's not necessarily the case, right? So now I can have an identity card that just says, here's my rights, here's my privileges, but this is not who I am. I'll use a different certificate every time so that we get that promise of before that they don't know exactly who I am. And if I come back 10 times, they can't tell if that's 10 times me or if it's 10 different users. A couple of quick view of parameters I mentioned. In the existing SCMS, we have these batches of 20 certificates. You change them every 5 minutes. You keep them around for a week. All of these are parameters that can be adjusted in the system. So, for example, you might change a concurrency model to say, I'm going to not cycle through 20 certificates randomly. I'm just going to use them in sequence and never use them again, right? So in that sort of login type authentication mechanism, I might just use a certificate once and then throw it away and never use it again. Whereas for a sensor that's broadcasting lots of data, I might change it frequently. The rate at which I change is going to depend on how fast I move around, right? If I'm moving much faster than a car, I might be able to change much more slowly because it's harder to track me. But if I'm moving at a different rate, I can change my frequency differently. There are a few challenges. So if you're literally following the design of the V2V system, the radio mechanism that it uses to communicate peer-to-peer is based on 802.11p, the DSRC standard. That is licensed only for safety applications. So if you want to do something like sensor data, you might need a different part of the spectrum in order to broadcast on. One thought is something like Bluetooth LE in advertising mode is interesting, right? Because all the security is in the protocol, in the messages. You don't need the underlying radio level to provide any authentication. So as long as you can broadcast stuff, you're good. Bluetooth LE in advertising mode, you can spew as much data as you want. The back-end system is pretty complex and regulated. You're going to need a separate instance of this, right? You can't just hop on the USDOT instance and say, hey, give me certs. You're going to have to stand up another instance. But fortunately, there's lots of work being done right now to develop APIs, back-end infrastructure to support this. So I don't think that's going to be a big challenge. There are some IP, particularly around the certificates, implicit certificates. They are free license available for vehicle-to-vehicle applications. You might want to look into that for others. Not my company that has them. There's others. So look into that. In conclusion, so the SCMS is a very large, potentially killer app for privacy-preserving authentication. It's received a significant amount of research and investment by the USDOT. It's been tested at medium large scale of thousands of devices. There's a new test being launched right now in New York, Florida, and Wyoming, where they're going to be testing much larger numbers of vehicles and really stressing this back-end infrastructure to make sure that it scales well and is supportable over time. And the system is designed, as I said, so that it's independent. So you can have one SCMS manager that serves many, many sensor applications or a smart city type of application. They don't need to trust each other. They can be independent. So the architecture really serves itself nicely to competing elements that are sharing the same infrastructure but not necessarily agreeing with each other on how they have to operate. Thank you. I think I have a minute for questions. Yes. I will be around afterwards.
Okay, so since we are out of time for questions, make sure to visit with our guest in the break room. Thank you. There are two of them.
I got an update.
Oh, yeah, so this is probably it.
Yeah. Is there a mic? No, just the microphone there. Yeah.
Okay. And your last name is Soya.
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 Soya. Soya.